I'm really excited to tell you about another fascinating Parcast original called Villains. It explores the various psychological, political, and emotional factors that lead to villains, both real and fictional. And now, you can hear a special clip from the first episode on Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men. To listen to the full first episode, follow Villains for free on Spotify and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. I hope you enjoy the clip.
What is scarier than a man who makes his own morality? A man who decides the destiny of others through his own twisted set of rules. Would we call this man a psychopath or a harbinger of fate? A ruthless killer or an enlightened being? To find out, we're going to look at one of fiction's most infamous villains, Anton Chigurh. The Arbiter of Death. Welcome to Villains, a Parcast original. I'm Alastair Murden. On this show, we look at the world's most infamous villains, both real and imagined. We aim to understand how villainy translates from history into our greatest fictional stories. You can find episodes of Villains and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Villains for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Villains in the search bar. On this show, we will look to nail down our changing cultural perception about what makes a villain. We aim to do so by comparing some of the scariest men and women to ever exist to the most chilling characters in literature, cinema, and on stage. Over the next 10 weeks, we will cover our first category, the postmodern psychopath. This includes fictional characters like Villanelle from Killing Eve, Alex from A Clockwork Orange, and Norman Bates from Psycho. We'll also examine what these villains look like in the real world through the likes of hitman Richard Kuklinski, serial killer Ed Kemper, and murderer Angela Simpson. But today, we are focusing on one of the most recognizable villains in recent memory. The concept of a villain is not a fixed one. It has changed over the course of time and varied between cultures. This is because a villain is not necessarily defined by the actions of the individuals. Rather, they are made such by the collective mind of society, what we deem as wrong and evil. Which brings us to the first type of villain we will cover over the next 10 weeks, the postmodern psychopaths, or, in layman's terms, the agents of chaos. A psychopath is a person who is devoid of empathy. They make harmful and aggressive choices without remorse and rarely take the blame for their actions. In short, a psychopath is someone who will have difficulty living within an ordered society because they do not operate with the same emotional capacity as an everyday person. In the late 2000s, film saw a strange flurry of these types of emotionless psychopaths. Heath Ledger as the Joker in The Dark Knight, Daniel Day-Lewis as Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood, and, of course, Javier Bardem as Anton Chigurh. These characters each relentlessly pursued something, chaos, oil, and money, respectively, without much in the way of reason or motivation. Their pursuit was furious, taking lives and leaving a destructive path in their wake, but what they truly wanted, what they truly chased, was never made clear. It's a chilling concept. To stop at nothing for something ambiguous. Where did the idea of these characters come from? Why did they emerge in the zeitgeist at such a similar time? This is the group that shined the brightest spotlight on the postmodern psychopath, the type of character whose actions shed light on their incredible motivation and drive. But there was no clear reason behind this driving motivation. What's more, these characters are not so unrealistic as we might think. In fact, a three-year study by Samuel J. Leisted and Paul Linkowski called Psychopathy and the Cinema, Fact or Fiction, concluded that the subject of today's episode, Anton Chigurh, was the most realistic psychopath ever to grace the screen. The combination of his, quote, incapacity for love, absence of shame or remorse, lack of psychological insight, inability to learn from past experiences, cold-blooded attitude, ruthlessness, total determination, and lack of empathy make him an utterly chilling antagonist that seems to be effectively invulnerable and resistant to any form of emotion or humanity. It is this proximity to reality that makes Chigurh so compelling, and it is the reason we will use him to launch into our discussion of the postmodern psychopath. The 2005 novel No Country for Old Men by Cormac McCarthy and the subsequent 2008 film of the same name introduced Chigurh as a strange sort of hitman, operating on a plane outside of social customs, even those of the gangsters and drug runners he works with. But this quality, which makes him almost unnervingly stable and lucid for such a brutal killer, also gives him the features of something otherworldly. Chigurh is the product of McCarthy's bleak imagination and the lost sentiment of the American Southwest in 1980. But to understand the depth of this villain, we must understand the story. For those of you that have seen the movie or read the book, this is simply a brief recap. Be warned, there are spoilers going forward. No Country for Old Men is, at its core, a very simple story. Out hunting one day in Terrell County, near the US-Mexican border in southwest Texas, a Vietnam War veteran discovers the bloody remains of a drug deal gone wrong. He follows the last man standing until he finds a satchel filled with money. A lot of money. About $2.4 million worth. The man, Llewellyn Moss, takes the money and goes on the run. He is pursued by the several parties involved in the deal, Pablo Acosta's Mexican cartel, Anton Chigurh, a hitman hired by an unknown party who also stakes claim to the money, and the county sheriff, Ed Tom Bell. By the time the story is over, the man that takes the money is dead, the county sheriff is retired, and the hitman Chigurh has returned the money to his anonymous employer. But inside this basic plot is a much richer and more complicated tale. A tale of characters who are unnerving in their unpredictability. None more so than Anton Chigurh, a man of such inexplicable behavior that Javier Bardem's brilliant portrayal is forever burned into the legacy of cinematic history. His role is simple. Find the money at all cost. This means pursue Llewellyn Moss at all cost. But when we start to uncover how Chigurh executes these pursuits, we see that he is no ordinary bounty hunter. He is calm, shockingly ruthless, intelligent, poised, an ideal killer. One who might even garner a form of respect in the same way we respect so many of cinema's hitmen and assassins. At least, he might have, if his motivations were not so utterly baffling. And yet, Chigurh does not seem totally devoid of human characteristics. He appears to follow a self-defined set of rules. In fact, he does so more stringently than all of the other characters in the novel. Perhaps this dedication is the thing that makes him most terrifying of all. But if we are to paint a picture of this villain, we must look at the moments that most define the character. Moments where he holds life and death in his hands. When we first meet Chigurh, he is in handcuffs in a police station. Handcuffs he uses to brutally choke the officer by wrapping the chain link around his neck when he is completely unaware. Chigurh then takes the deputy's police vehicle and pulls over an unsuspecting victim. As he approaches the car, he carries a gas tank with a hose attached. We eventually discover this to be a cattle stun gun, but Chigurh uses it with a much more sinister purpose. He briefly places his hands on the man's face, raises the stun gun to his forehead, and discharges it, killing the man instantly. We are two scenes into the movie, hardly two pages into the book, and already we know that this man is ruthless and kills without hesitation. Suddenly, any time we witness Chigurh, we are on guard. He is dangerous, even unafraid of the police. So when we see him for the third time as he stops at a gas station, a moment that would otherwise be ordinary, suddenly becomes rife with tension. The gas attendant tries to make conversation with Chigurh as he pays, but this accidentally triggers an uncomfortable aggression in the killer. Which is when Chigurh decides to play a peculiar game. He flips a coin and forces the man to choose heads or tails. In the coin toss, Chigurh intends to determine whether or not he will kill this unassuming stranger. It is an odd method for a man we already witnessed senselessly murder two men in quick succession, but it does offer a quick insight into his line of thinking. As he grills the attendant, he seems particularly interested in the choices he made that led him to stand in front of Chigurh in the gas station. When he will close, his routine, his marriage, the fact that the house he now lives in was owned by his wife's family. It is clear that the attendant's choices are the most important thing to Chigurh. And when the ultimate decision comes to call the coin toss, Chigurh insists that it is the attendant who calls it, saying firmly, "I cannot do it for you." The importance of the coin flip cannot be overstated. Chigurh is deciding whether or not to murder a stranger, a total stranger, on the suddenly bleak odds of heads or tails. But because Chigurh frames this not as a game of chance, rather as one of choice, it is revealed that Chigurh does not really believe in luck. He is a man who operates on the principles of fate, who believes choices cannot be undone, especially if those choices brought them into Chigurh's murderous grasp. It was fate that decided their destiny, fate that forces Chigurh to kill them. This is one of the most frightening things about this character. He considers his acts of murder to be inevitable. However, this principle works both ways. When the man calls heads, Chigurh reveals that he has won the most dangerous game. Chigurh leaves the gas station. The attendant lives. This is an unsettling introduction to the hitman's methods. He is not a random psychopath killing at every turn. There is an order and set of rules that he plays by, rules that are his own, rules that no one truly understands until they are looking into his eyes, looking into the eyes of death itself. Something that even the roughest men melt in the face of. Enter Carson Wells, a bounty hunter of sorts, another vicious hitman who once worked side by side with Anton Chigurh himself. An unnamed party hires Wells to track down Chigurh and the satchel for this reason. He is one of the few people to have seen and known Chigurh, a fact that prevails in both the novel and the film. Wells is important to the story because he gives Chigurh a past, whereas otherwise he would have seemed to have appeared from the jaws of hell itself. Wells forces us to consider that even a psychopath like Chigurh has to be a part of society on some level. But even Wells fails to recognize his true nature at the time it matters most. When Wells returns to his hotel in a small border town in Texas, Chigurh is waiting for him and holds him up at gunpoint. Then, the two one-time partners talk. In this exchange, there is no coin involved, but the killer does something else that is quite strange. He tries to get Wells to admit that he is going to die. Wells will not. He offers Chagur money instead, assuring him that it would be a good payday. Chagur agrees that it would be a good payday, but he says, it's just in the wrong currency. During the exchange, Chagur seems more appalled than anything. He is almost offended that Wells would try such pleas rather than admit he was going to die. He even uses a peculiar word, dignity. There is no dignity in Wells' denial of his own death. After a brief back and forth, Chagur does what everyone knows he will do and shoots his one-time partner. The most interesting takeaway from this scene is that Chagur is not just a man obsessed with directing fate, but a shepherd of death. It is the second time we have seen him converse in depth with a person whose life he holds in his hands. In both cases, Chagur wants them to realize that their whole life's path brought them here. He poses the question directly to Wells, saying, if the rule you followed brought you here, then of what use was the rule? We might go further. If Wells' life only led him to this point, to death at the hands of his ex-partner, what was the point of his life? Chagur wants Wells to admit that he's going to die. Fine. This seems relatively normal among old combat veterans. They share a perverse sense of honor. But more than that, he is curious about meaning. How could Wells have made a single right choice in his life if it simply led him to this death at Chagur's hand? Suddenly, Chagur, the senseless killer, seems to have a type of sense. He is there to impose the will of fate. With the gas station attendant, Chagur knew that he did not choose to come into his path, so he gave him a final choice in the coin toss. Wells, on the other hand, came after Chagur, chased death itself, and thus followed his rule to the end of his life. Chagur's first two extended conversations reveal a great deal about his psychopathy. But the third moment that is key to his story is by far the most revealing.
To find out what happens next, follow Villains for free on Spotify and anywhere else you listen to podcasts.